This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
With Mary Sheffield now in the mayor's office, Mayor Mike Duggan can focus 100% of his time and efforts on his independent run for governor of the state of Michigan. Earlier today, he sat down with members of the media on a Zoom call to lay out his plan for the next 10 months. Here is that raw, unedited Zoom conversation.
All right. Well, I just want to say...
Recording in progress.
So today, I'm officially a full-time candidate for governor. I no longer have the responsibilities of being the mayor. I'm in the headquarters now. I'm meeting a lot of the staff who I hadn't met here before, who seem very enthusiastic, and we're going to work. So tomorrow I'll be up in New Baltimore with a group there that the mayor has put together, and Thursday in Battle Creek and Kalamazoo, and Saturday in Pontiac, and Monday in Flint. And I will be asking the people of this state, invite me to your community. And I will show up. I'm going to be campaigning day and night in every corner of this state. And every place I go, I'm meeting with the people who feel like they've been forgotten, who've been fed up or left out. And they show up and express those feelings about the parties and about the way things are going in Michigan. And it is pretty powerful to sit here. You would not know from watching the nightly shows where the Republicans and Democrats spend their time expressing outrage at each other and raising money off it. But when I'm talking to people in these communities, they aren't talking about the nonsense in Washington. They actually want to know why their kids don't have vocational training in their high school, why the reading levels in this state are slipping, why the young people are moving out, and why when their kids are ready to get jobs, they can't afford housing in their communities. And I'm going to keep running a campaign focused on what I'm hearing from the people in the groups. I'm going to let the other people do their Republican and Democratic fundraising talking points. And we're going to give the people of this state a choice. And, of course, you saw right out of the gate how obsessed the Democrats are with me. Man, this is why I left this Michigan Democratic Party. They have become a party that has basically one mantra. And that's vote blue no matter who, that you hate the Republicans so much, that you hate Donald Trump so much, that you vote blue and you don't worry about the candidates. And you haven't heard any of them talk about an affordable housing policy. You haven't heard any of them talk about an education policy. But you have seen them essentially trash the other side. And so it's been very exciting. We've done well raising money. And of course, none of the candidates has been able to match what we did in the train station last August with 1,000 people showing up, 200 elected officials endorsing. And we got the party still in denial. They don't think 1,000 people in a night at a rally for an independent candidate means anything, but you haven't seen any of their candidates be able to put 100 in a room. You can feel what's happened in this state. Now that I can do it full time, I expect it to pick up. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Your Honor, Horace Sheffield recently said that he plans to endorse the Democratic nominee for governor, and you very prominently endorsed his daughter for mayor. Now that her race is over, do you expect her to reciprocate, and are you concerned that there are going to be more people out there taking Horace's position where they'll endorse a Democrat no matter who it is?
Again, so you already saw I got endorsed by more than 100 African-American ministers, not just from Detroit, but from Flint and Lansing and around the state, including most of the prominent ministers in southeastern Michigan. Every one of them had the courage to say, I'm not going to buy into vote blue no matter who. The Democrats actually ought to earn my vote. And so I won't get every single endorsement. And Reverend Sheffield, there are some who That's what they believe. And, you know, I'm Republican no matter what, or I'm Democrat no matter what. Those folks don't need to bother paying attention the next 10 months. The campaign doesn't mean anything to them. They made up their minds. They're going to vote a straight ticket. I'm talking to the people who are troubled by the direction things are headed. And so each person will make their own decision, and I'll be pleased to have the endorsements that I get.
How will you feel if Mary Sheffield doesn't endorse you?
Yeah, this is, you know, I'm not going to worry about any individual person. I've got 200 elected officials who have endorsed me already. The mayor of Detroit obviously is important, and she'll make a decision that she thinks is right for Detroit when the time that she thinks is right. I didn't ask her for an endorsement as a condition of my support for her. I supported her because I believe she was the best candidate to continue the direction that we started in the city of Detroit. I think her transition reflects she's done extremely well. And I think the fact she got the support of 77% of Detroiters indicates the people of the city have confidence in that as well.
Mr. Duggan, if you're elected...
Andy, go ahead.
Will you promise not to raise taxes, sir?
Yeah, yeah. I don't make blanket statements on anything, but if you look at the time that in the 12 years that I was mayor, I didn't raise taxes. I did just the opposite. I cut property taxes 3 years in a row, cut 5 mills. We were the largest property tax cutter in the state. So anybody can say something. I say you ought to look at what people did, and I've been the state's leader in property tax reductions.
Why can't you take a firm stance on the no tax pledge?
You know, I don't know what issues are going to come up and what new services might come up. You've seen, for example, you had people who were selling products on the internet, avoiding sales tax when people who had businesses in Michigan were paying the tax. It made sense to level that playing field. And so I'm not going to make a blanket statement, but I don't really plan to raise taxes. As I say, I balanced the budget in Detroit 12 years in a row without raising taxes. I've done it while cutting taxes. And I am very confident. People in Detroit who know I came in with an $18 billion deficit and left the city with $500 million in reserves without raising taxes. You know, this is, Tim, basically the question. Are you going to vote based on what people say, or are you going to vote based on what they've done? And what I'm finding is a lot of people actually want to know what you've done.
Well, you believe internally that signing the no tax pledge is governmentally irresponsible, yes?
Again, I'm just telling you that I don't know what circumstances there will be. I don't envision raising taxes, but I wouldn't do an absolute pledge on that. I just say, look at my 12 years as mayor. I cut taxes.
Andy, go ahead.
I'm wondering what your position is on Donald's policies as they affect Michigan. That was a big talking point from the Democrats this morning, and I'm wondering what your response is.
Well, I've done a number of interviews where I've criticized the Canadian tariffs. They have hurt the auto plants in Detroit because, as I've explained over and over, you know, we have three assembly plants in the city of Detroit, two Jeep plants and a GM truck plant. They have a 50-mile supply chain radius for parts. And that 50 miles includes Ontario, Canada. Our whole supply network has included Ontario. So when you put tariffs on Canadian auto parts, you're putting tariffs on Michigan cars. And so that's an issue take a significant issue because it affects our jobs every day. The other stuff that these guys get into, the Republicans and Democrats with their outrage machines on whatever the latest thing that Trump said, I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to deal with solving problems. I delivered for Detroit by not getting engaged in the fight of the week in Washington. The Democrats will attack me for not getting engaged in the fight of the week in Washington. But what the heck? They attacked Gretchen Whitmer for going to Washington and landing the Selfridge plant. So if, you know, Governor Whitmer can be attacked by the Democrats for not being hard enough on Trump, I won't let it bother me.
Lily, go ahead. Thanks, guys. Mayor Duggan, so I wanted to see if I could get your reaction. Some of your campaign staff were retweeting posts from the Midwesterner over the weekend saying, you know, that Jocelyn Benson was going to find a way to get you kicked off the ballot. And I'm interested in seeing, do you believe that Jocelyn Benson would abuse her office and manipulate her position to get you kicked off the ballot?
We're going to file so many signatures that nobody's even going to bother to challenge her.
And on follow-up, presumably, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but as from your time, as when you were a registered Democrat, I imagine you voted for Jocelyn Benson twice. Do you regret that?
No, I donated to our campaign. I think I was one of our first donors. You look at the way things are going in this state right now, in every 2 years, this state takes a U-turn. We take a U-turn on our schools policy. We go from grading our schools A, B, C, D, F, to red, green, yellow, to percentages, to canceling them, et cetera. We keep doing U-turns on an economic development policy from mega credits to brownfield credits to canceling brownfield credits to trying to cancel the MEDC. And the reality is this, that we have a 50-50 state that's going to swing back and forth every 2 years. And Michigan is never going to get out of this permanent U-turn cycle if we don't find a way to get Republicans and Democrats to establish a Michigan path. And that's what I'm going to try and do.
And one last stab, because you didn't really answer it the first time. Do you believe that Secretary Benson will or would try to have you disqualified from the ballot?
I'm telling you, I'm going to file so many signatures, nobody's going to bother to try to have me disqualified.
Thank you. Craig, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. A slight follow-up to the questions Lily just asked. Do you trust Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson to oversee the election that's happening this year? A number of Republican lawmakers have asked the DOJ to come in and monitor the election because they think there's a conflict with Benson being on the ballot and being the Secretary of State. What do you think about this? I mean, this is a very real issue that I would think you have a view on.
I do. I was an election lawyer. The ballots are counted at the city and township. And so I'm confident that city and township clerks across the state will count the ballots accurately. It's not something I'm focused on.
So you don't think there needs to be any federal oversight of this election?
Yeah, I have not seen any reason for it. There have been times where the both the state and the federal courts have had to step in on the Secretary of State and correct a particular action, but I haven't seen it affecting the ballot counting. Again, city and township clerks count ballots, and I have confidence in the integrity of city and township clerks in this state.
Travers Corey from the Midwesterner.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Are there any Republican priorities that you are going to take up as governor?
I would say there are certainly Michigan priorities. Now, I've listened to both parties talk about how they're not going to raid the K-12 school aid fund, and yet they're taking $1.3 billion that Michigan voters thought were going to K-12 schools when they voted for Proposal A back in 1994. That to me shouldn't be a Republican or Democratic issue. You can't have our reading levels slide into the bottom of the country while you're siphoning money out of the schools. Is that Republican or is that Democrat? I think that's a Michigan priority. I look at what's happening on these data centers, and it's everything that is wrong with this state. We have to build data centers to be competitive on the jobs of the future. But there needs to be a single statewide standard with leadership that says there will be no electrical rate increase on the existing residents, that the data warehouse will be guaranteed to pay those rates. There can't be water being taken out of the water system and taken back. There's got to be a closed loop system to protect the environment, and the local community has to have a say in it. You can't override their objections. We should have a clear standard in this state that says this is how it works. We got a lot of small communities who have huge national corporations coming in, and maybe that community has a part-time city attorney. The state of Michigan has to come in with the expertise to say these are the statewide standards, and we want you to build in Michigan if you meet these standards. Is that a Republican priority or a Democratic priority? If it's not a Michigan priority, you're going to find the jobs of the future pass us by. And so these are the kinds of things, I think what I hear from people is they want their problem solved.
Are there any tactics from either the Republican leadership in the state or Democrat leadership that you want to emulate, like any good practices that you've seen, or are you just going to completely start from scratch?
Yeah, well, I'm going to run my practices. Of course, when you run for mayor of Detroit, it's not where there's no Republican or Democratic organization. I built the organization from scratch, and that's what we're doing today. It's a lot of Republican and Democrats who are fed up with politics as usual who have joined my campaign. It's quite an interesting mix of folks. The debates are always lively, but they share a passion to change the system. And so I'm going to be doing what I'm doing. I'm sitting in farmhouses with 12 people at a time. And I've listened to people say, I can't win that way. The state's too big. But I'm finding that people appreciate somebody who actually wants to sit down and listen to them. And I will say again, invite me to your community and I will come out and talk to you, because I am just learning so much going to areas of the state that say they haven't seen a governor candidate in decades.
Clara, do you want to go ahead while we wait for Izzy?
Sure. Can you all hear me?
Yeah, we hear you just fine.
Okay, great. So obviously every campaign will say we're going to show up everywhere, but at some point you do have to target some places over others. So I'm curious, what is the political profile of the places that you're going to be focused on, the places where you think you can make inroads? Are these swing counties? Are they Democratic-leaning counties? Are you going after GOP territory?
You know, I am in these little townships, Vassar Township and Grand Township. I'm in the village of Lexington, the village of Port Austin. And I am finding enormous enthusiasm to change the system. So there's no area I'm writing off. But, you know, look at what we do. When we do an event, I publish it. People come out. We get big crowds. My opponents, when they do an event, you have to pre-register. And they conceal the location. They'll only tell you at the last second if you're pre-registered, like they're Dick Cheney hiding away in an undisclosed location. These are two different kinds of campaigns. And the kind of campaign I'm running is drawing the people who have felt left out by the traditional partisan campaigns.
Ben, go ahead.
Hello. Just wanted to throw you a softball first. Curtis Sertel doesn't think you have a path to victory in November. What's your response to that? And which of the candidates on either side of the aisle do you think that you have the best chance at beating in November in a three-way race?
For a guy he doesn't think can win, he sure spends a lot of time talking about me. So it's going to be okay. And there's no doubt about it. Curtis Sertel has a tough problem. We just had a Democratic trifecta. 2 years of complete Democratic control. And I sat down with the Detroit legislator and said, this is our chance. Let's have a statewide affordable housing plan. Let's deal with the schools. Let's deal with vocational training. Let's deal with long-term secure mental health beds. Our police officers in this state are too often the first line of response to mental illness. They didn't get any of those things done. They were so busy fighting with the far left that wouldn't compromise with the moderates. And of course, they wouldn't dare take some Republican votes. God help you if you worked across the aisle. And so you saw what happened in lame duck. It blew up and they all went home without getting anything done. And so Curtis Sertel's got to cover the fact that Democrats don't stand for anything except they're against the Republicans. And so he's got the slogan of vote blue no matter who. He's going to push it nonstop. And I'm a threat to that. If you want to stop and think about what you're doing, if you're with the Democrats, you made up your mind, God bless you. I'm fine with that. But there's a whole lot of Democrats are troubled by the lack of accomplishment within the party. They're very troubled about the deep split. And a lot of them think maybe there can be a Michigan solution. So I'm pretty sure Curtis is going to continue to be obsessed with me. You saw what happened when those basically 200 elected officials, 100 of whom were Democrats, stood up and endorsed me at the train station. He said, vote blue no matter who, or here's what we're going to do to you. And he cut off their voter list and their fundraising list because how dare they think for themselves. But there's a lot of Democrats out there who this time I think are going to think for themselves.
So as a follow-up to that, you know, that brings up an interesting point of the vote blue no matter what scenario. You know, you've made some really strong inroads with Republicans who might be looking for something different in November. The Dems are clearly not your friends right now. But, you know, progressive voters are an important part of that Democratic Party electorate. And I'm not sure that they are necessarily all in on the person who might be the front runner and the potential nominee, Jocelyn Benson, if she is the nominee, for a whole host of reasons. And I asked Curtis about this earlier. But, you know, despite what you said earlier at the top of the order about, you know, the far left wing of the party being kind of a hindrance to Democrats' you know, ability to get things done, are you courting progressive voters in any way, shape, or form? What's your message to them to potentially leave the Democratic wheelhouse and join the Duggan wheelhouse as an independent?
Well, I want to take issue with your first thing when you say the Democrats aren't my friend. I now have 15 traditional Democratic unions that have endorsed my campaign. They aren't buying into the vote blue no matter who. And they're the postal workers, and they're the electrical workers, and they're the hospitality and restaurant and casino workers, and the police officers, and the firefighters, and the carpenters, and the like. These people have been overwhelmingly Democratic-leaning and have decided the Democratic Party is not meeting the needs of the working men and women. I now have more union endorsements than all the Democratic candidates put together. But with regard to the progressives, I am meeting with a number of progressive groups, and what I'm saying to them is this. Right now, you are getting candidates who tell you 100% of what you want to hear and got 0% of what you wanted done. I'm somebody who's going to get 70% of what you want done, but we're going to work with Republicans on common ground. What is better off? And as I point out to the progressives, even if you get it passed now, 2 years from now when the Republicans take control, they'll just rescind it. It's the same thing that Rick Snyder learned. He passed a lot of things when he had a Republican trifecta. They virtually all got rescinded as soon as there was a Democratic trifecta, and the state is right back behind the eight ball. We keep changing directions when Ohio and Indiana have very clear strategies on education, on job training, on vocational training, on bringing in business. We got to have a Michigan path. And so I am meeting in areas that are considered far right, in very red areas, in agriculture areas, and finding people are angry with both parties there. I'm meeting with some folks on the far left, but there's no doubt the great majority of my support is not going to come from the far right or the far left. Thanks.
We're going to go back to Izzy, see if her audio is working. Still can't hear you. Do you want to send me your question, and yeah, we'll read it out. Perfect. Okay, Quinn is next in line.
Yeah, I'm worried now. Can you hear me?
Just fine.
Yes.
All right. Hey, sir. Nice to see you.
See you.
Happy New Year. You know, you talked a lot about meeting with people in individual little housing areas like you did when you were running for mayor the first time. And then you said you're learning so much. What are you learning? What are you getting from those meetings?
It is amazing what you find out. When you talk to 17 and 18-year-olds, in outstate school districts who tell me their schools offered nothing in the way of vocational training, that they're all into this Michigan merit curriculum. We decided as a state every single kid is going to go to college, and if you're not, you're less than. And they have no vocational training programs. They're saying, what about us? We've been left behind. People are mad about this. You go to the farm areas, and of course you've got your issues certainly with our soybean farmers and their loss of the exports, which has them troubled. I am amazed at every rural area I go to. The deer overpopulation is a huge issue in the state. It's a huge issue in auto accidents. It's a huge issue on the eating of the crops and the fact that the state hasn't taken a strong enough stand. This doesn't sound like an important issue to people in the Tri-County area, but there's a whole lot of people in this state that dealing with the deer population in an effective way is really important. And of course, everywhere you go, you hear about the arbitrary decision-making of Eagle. I've certainly run into it with affordable housing projects in the city of Detroit. And I end up in farms in northern Michigan where they tell me about the problems they've had with Eagle and being able to farm. I tell them about not being able to build affordable housing, not because we want them to change the standards, but because you can't get a consistent decision. And say, if you had an Eagle, an environmental standard in this state that says we're not talking about weakening the standards. We're talking about making them predictable, applied consistently everywhere, and timely decisions. But it is really amazing how similar issues are in different parts of the states, and in other cases, how much you learn that people downstate might not know about.
One other one along those lines. How about the reception to you? I mean, you're a big city, or were a big city mayor. I mean, you dealt with bankruptcy, all these issues. When you're in the rural areas, I mean, are they saying, what are you trying to come in here and tell us what to do? I mean, how's that reactions work?
And of course, there was a point at which I was a white guy who moved from Livonia campaigning in 83% black city. I did not go into those neighborhoods saying, I'm coming in with your answers. I came in listening. But I got to tell you, I go up to Marquette, and the first thing is, you're from Detroit, what do you know about our problems? We're completely forgotten and ignored up here in the Upper Peninsula. I said, let me tell you about representing people who have felt forgotten and ignored. I take you down and introduce you to a mom raising three kids on a block with no street lights, where the parks hadn't been cut in 2 years, when the ambulances don't show up. And I didn't make excuses. We sat down and solved problems. Tell me about your problem. They said, well, the biggest problem is when our kids graduate from high school, there's no affordable housing here. They either have to be in mom and dad's basement or they have to move out. And I said, let me tell you what we've done on affordable housing. We used to have 10 cities in Detroit. We built 6,000 affordable housing units. Let me show you how you do it. And let's do it statewide. And you can see these people say, maybe we have more in common with Detroit than we thought. Politicians keep telling us how different we are and how we have to be afraid of each other in other parts of the state. By the time I'm done, what I find is everybody wants their kids to have a good education. Everybody wants their kids to be able to stay in Michigan when they're done. They want to be able to get a good job and have a future here. And there's a lot more here that unifies us than divides us.
I'm going to read out Izzy's question now. She said, regarding your working relationship with President Trump, what was the last time you talked to the administration, whether that be the president himself or his staff, and what was discussed? What in particular would you like to work on for Michigan with the federal administration if elected governor?
So I've never met President Trump. I've never spoken to him. But Jerome Gorgon, his U.S. attorney for the Justice Department, when he came in, I sat down with him his first week on the job, and I said, we have to deal with these gun violence issues. And I've got serious offenders who can be prosecuted far more effectively in the federal system with more resources and more certain punishment. And if you want to be helpful to us, give us embedded prosecutors in our precincts from the U.S. Attorney's Office. U.S. Attorney Gorgon did that. We have, for the first time, federal prosecutors sitting in precincts with cops doing investigations together. We also have great cooperation from the county prosecutor. But you look at Detroit, just finished up last year with a 91% reduction in carjackings from when I started. 780 carjackings in 2013 when I got elected to 76 last year. The fewest homicides since 1964. And so we've had good partnerships with our county and state officials. But the Trump U.S. Attorney's Office in the last year has been an enormously good partner in bringing down the violence. And we didn't want any nonsense conversation about National Guard or any of that. We did it by having the DEA and the ATF and the U.S. Attorney work with us to get the illegal guns off the street and to crack down on the violent criminals.
We'll go back to Lily.
Thanks, guys, for letting me have another swing at it. Mayor Duggan, when you and I talked back in July after the campaign finance deadline back then, you told me that one of your priorities for the end of 2025 was getting a small dollar donor operation set up. Wanted to see just the pulse check there, if that's something you guys are still focused on, or if you're seeing financial success, you know, with the model you've been going with, you know, the fundraisers and in various communities and everything.
There's no question that a lot of really good things have happened because of my running as an independent. Many, many people are showing up who would not show up if I were a Democratic candidate for governor. But one of the downsides is Act Blue is really effective with the established networks of small donors. And we're building that from scratch. And so we're making some progress, but we have to compete. You've seen that Republican and Democratic main candidates are raising majority of their money outside the state of Michigan. We're raising 90% of our money in-state. And that's going to be one of the real challenges this year, is for those people across the country. The No Labels people have started to be helpful. But those people across the country who feel like this constant red versus blue needs a change, I've got to find a way to reach them. And we're building it from scratch. Haven't done it effectively yet, but I got confidence in this team.
Andy, you're up.
Thank you, Maggie. So as a follow-up to Ben's question, their third parties seem to be have less of a chance, but you seem confident that you have a chance of winning this. What is the path that you're seeing to win in November?
Again, we've had five states elect an independent governor since 1990. People remember Jesse Ventura in Minnesota, but you had Chafee in Rhode Island, you had Lowell Weicker in Connecticut, you had Agnes King in Maine. And every time, either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party swung so far right or left that somebody left the party and ran as an independent, said it's time for change, and got elected. I have never seen a state more evenly divided than Michigan today, and people more fed up. And so I don't think the climate's ever been more fertile. And I would just say to this, for any one of you who was in that train station when I had 1,000 people in the audience, you tell me which one of the Republican or Democratic candidates can put 1,000 people in the room behind their candidacy. There is an enormous sentiment in this state to have a third option.
Follow-up, pie in the sky, who are you looking at as a running mate or from what sector?
You know, so I have to file a piece of paper with the Secretary of State by the 1st of September. And I am meeting people all across the state of enormous talents and background. And the person who will be Lieutenant Governor, I may not have met yet. So I'm getting a chance to get to know people in lots of different parts of the state. And I will pick somebody who reflects the values of uniting this state and charting a different course.
Colin, go ahead.
Hi, Mayor. Thanks for taking my question. I'm wondering, because you mentioned a few times feeling that the state's gone on this back and forth pendulum swing between Democratic control and Republican control. And I'm wondering how you would plan on stopping that as governor without just leaving Governor Whitmer's policies in place or letting government grind to almost a halt, as we've seen with divided government this past session with the fewest number of laws passed.
Right, right. The possibility of government grinding to a halt is not really much of a risk. These guys have managed to do this already. You had your 4,000 schools in this state opened in September without budgets. You had schools across the state couldn't hire teachers they needed and ended up with larger class sizes because the budget didn't get done in October. And so you look at the potential of gridlock. We've got that now. Look at this chaos. The Democrats spend a whole bunch of money on a straight partisan vote, and then the Republicans rescind it with no notice on a straight Republican vote, and you've plunged all kinds of programs in this state into chaos. So here's what I believe. If the people of Michigan elect an independent governor this November, they are sending a clear, unmistakable message to Lansing. We're fed up with politics as usual. And that's a message that could be so clear, I don't even think Lansing politicians can miss it. But what I'm saying to all the people who are with me, the chambers of commerce that have endorsed me, the business groups that have endorsed me, the unions that have endorsed me, the Democratic officials and Republican officials that have endorsed me, your job doesn't end when I get elected. I am going to chart a course for K-12 education that goes back to teaching the basics of reading, of phonics, of putting in a curriculum that doesn't get changed every couple years, that gives these children real tutoring and real time to catch up, and holds the principals and teachers accountable. I'm expecting the Republican and Democratic leaders who helped me get elected to also help me with the legislators chart a new course. But I think I'm hearing from all kinds of Republican and Democratic legislators right now who have figured out that when they're running in swing districts, the voters who are going to decide every single swing rep and senator district election and going to decide every single swing congressional election are going to be the people voting Mike Duggan independent for governor. They're going to have to figure out how to appeal to those voters
come this October. And you're going to see, I think, the dynamics of this state shift considerably.
And just a quick follow-up question. I guess for every executive, you know, there's a temptation to come in and put your hands on something and change something to make it your own. And I'm wondering, A, how you would avoid falling or succumbing to that temptation to change some of the things that Whitmer put in place or past governors have put in place. And B, you know, Michigan governors are only in office a maximum of 8 years. How do you avoid that happening to policies you pursue going forward after you're out of office?
I went into a Detroit medical center that had lost $100 million a year for 5 years and it was on the verge of bankruptcy, and turned it around with nine straight positive years and went from 11,000 to 14,000 employees. I did that in 9 years. If you look at the city of Detroit, of course, you get elected 4 years at a time. I didn't go in to change things that didn't need to be changed. I changed what people wanted. I brought the auto plants back to Detroit so people went back to work. I got the parks cut and the riverfront rebuilt. I got the housing built so people who stayed we're not being pushed out of our city, but we're welcome to be here long term. But I got to tell you, the public schools in this state are in a turnaround situation. When your third grade reading level has gone from 19th to 44th, there's nothing to be calm about here. You need a turnaround governor. And it's declined under both Republicans and Democrats. And how do you think we're going to compete against the other states in this country? We aren't going to do it on weather. If it's not the talent of our residents, how do we compete? The housing has gotten completely unaffordable in this state. I don't care whether you're in Traverse City or Grand Rapids or Marquette or Detroit. People feel like they can't start their lives here because the housing's unaffordable. And I show them what we've done in Detroit where we built $1.6 billion of affordable housing. I didn't make excuses. We got out and did it. So I'm going to build on the things that need to be changed to make Michigan competitive long term. But unlike some of the candidates here, I was born here. I grew up here. I know what this state was like. And I feel like I know what makes us special. And I know what can get us back to the kind of leadership position that most Michigan residents my age grew up with.
ML?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Go ahead.
Your Honor, if you really want to set yourself apart from Republicans and Democrats, you can promise to make the legislature and the governor's office subject to the Freedom of Information Act and then not break your word. I know you said you don't want to make any sweeping pledges, but might this be an exception for the good of the people of Michigan?
You know, this to me, again, the question is, what do you say or what do you do? Every year I listen to the Democrats say, oh, we're going to make it more transparent. As soon as they get there, they come up with excuses not to do it. They had a trifecta for 2 years, and all the openness and transparency they talked about election time, of course, they didn't do any of it. But you look at my life, I spent 14 years as deputy county executive, 3 years as prosecutor, and 12 years as mayor. I spent 30 years under the Freedom of Information Act. It's second nature. We understand how it works. I haven't complained about it. And I never understood how the state of Michigan could pass a law that said cities think of it every day, but we exempt ourselves. So it's a fairness issue, and of course I support it for everybody.
So, Your Honor, just on that point, the incumbent said that if we couldn't get this passed by the legislature, that she would subject her own office voluntarily to the Freedom of Information Act. Now, she hasn't kept that pledge, but would you be willing to make that pledge and keep it, which, again, would make you a different kind of cat?
I act every day as if every document we create will be public, and you haven't seen issues. We've turned this stuff over, and, you know, sometimes it takes longer when we get flooded with questions, and if we take longer, we give you a discount on the search fees. But yeah, I don't have any problem with Freedom of Information Act at all. I've lived with it for 30 years every day.
Mr. Duggan, having been a resident of the state for all these many years, and you've watched all the governors who came before you Which one are you closest to, do you think?
Milliken. Of course, I'm partial. You know, Governor Milliken appointed my father as a judge on the circuit bench. So you had a governor there, who Republican governor, who worked with the mayor of Detroit, worked with Democrats, and I think put the interests of the state ahead of the Republican versus Democratic stuff.
And the conservatives couldn't stand.
Again, people on the far right and the far left don't like to compromise, and this is America. You're entitled to a far left or a far right view that says don't compromise. The problem is that in this state, because you only have two choices, those on the far left can paralyze the Democratic Party to do nothing. Those on the far right can paralyze the Republican Party. And the only thing they end up getting agreement on is they hate the other party. But if you came back to Detroit in 2013, literally everything in Detroit was black versus white, city versus suburbs, Detroit versus Lansing, Democrat versus Republican. It's all people here knew about politics, and we slid into bankruptcy as a result of all the fighting. But what I found when I sat in people's homes was the great majority of Detroiters wanted no part of the us versus them. They wanted their problem solved. And I think most people in Michigan feel the same way.
All right, we don't have any more questions. So with that, thank you all for coming. Happy New Year, and have a great rest of your day.
Look forward to seeing you all out there. And I know the other candidates will all be doing an interview just like this in the next couple of days.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.